It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Drops the throw, steps up, floats a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. Touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards.
Anderson, too much deflected.
Bell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Pass thrown, there was contact with the quarterback, and it's incomplete. They got pressure on Prescott. It was Adams who came blitzing in.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studios, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time for the weekend mailbag, bringing in the one and only Luke Grant. Next question comes in from Adam Gay Sucks is his handle. He says, have you heard anything about the Rams potentially trading a wide receiver? They have Kupp, Woods, and Cooks, and need some cap space after all of the signings that they've done, which include Goff, Ramsey, and Donald. Possible they shop a wide receiver. What do you think? So if the Rams were to move one of those guys, the logical one would be Brandon Cooks because of the cap hit. Woods and Cooper Kupp are really not that expensive. As far as Brandon Cooks, though, if you look at his cap hit, he's got, wow, amazing, 4 more years on his contract. And here are the cap numbers, 16.8, 16.8, 17.8, 17.4. Now, he's got 3 more years where it would be cost prohibitive to get rid of him. 2 of them where it's really cost prohibitive because there's no way he's going anywhere in 2020, which is fine because, quite frankly, if you're trading for him, I assume you're doing it without intending to cut him right away. His dead cap number in 2020 would be $21.8 million. His dead cap number the following year is $13 million as opposed to a $16.8 million cap hit if he's on the roster. So unless he's Tremaine Johnson level bad, he wouldn't be going anywhere in year number 2. Year 3, it becomes a little bit more conceivable because his cap hit's $17.8 million. If you release him, it's $8.2 million. So that's a heck of a cap hit to swallow, but you'd still save $9 million. And then the final year, the cap hit's negligible. It's $3.4 million as opposed to $17.4 million. So this is a tough one because I don't know that I love the idea of paying a wide receiver $17 million. And people will talk about Robbie Anderson. I get that Brandon Cooks is better than Robbie Anderson, but I wouldn't pay Robbie Anderson $17 million either. I think if you could get Robbie Anderson for like $13 million, that's a little bit different. But man, $17 million for Brandon Cooks is a lot of money. I like Brandon Cooks, but you'd have to give up draft picks and pay that kind of money to him. Probably wouldn't do it. And I don't think Kupp or Woods would be the ones that they'd be looking to trade because if they're looking to clear up cap space, the obvious one there would be Cooks. And I just don't see investing that kind of money in him and certainly not giving up a draft pick.
No, for me, it doesn't make sense at all. I think when you're looking at 16 to 17 million over 3 years, you really invest in that contract with some guaranteed money. It just doesn't make sense for Joe to absorb that kind of contract. There's a lot of talk on Twitter and the media right now about Odell Beckham. I know you and I probably aren't in huge favor of that or believe that Adam Gase would sign off on it, but that's a much easier contract to take. You're looking at the same cap hit in 2020, but he's only got limited $2 or $3 million guaranteed, I think, left on that deal. So if they were going to make a huge splash, I don't think it would ever be for Brandon Cooks. But regardless of who the player is, I don't think that's a move that Joe would make.
And we will answer that Odell Beckham question coming up in a bit on the mailbag because we did get questions about it. But before we talk about that or anything else, first I want to tell you about how you can take away some of the pain and feel healthier with Omax Health. Because Omax Health is all about making you feel better. If you're living with chronic pain, you know how terrible it is. Constant discomfort, it can keep you from exercising, sleeping, or even eating. So if you're dealing with chronic muscle and joint pain, then make sure you try the natural breakthrough pain relief solution, CryoFree CBD Roll-On, developed by Omax Health. It's non-prescription, it's an easy roll-on, it's 100% natural, and it works within 10 minutes. And here's the best part. As a listener of Play Like a Jet, you get a 20% off discount on a full bottle of cryo-free CBD pain relief roll-on and free shipping. Discount also applies towards any product site-wide. Just go to omaxhealth.com today and enter promo code OVERTIME. That's omaxhealth, omaxhealth.com, promo code OVERTIME, and you'll get yourself 20% off cryo-freeze and anything site-wide. And while you certainly want to keep your body healthy, you definitely want to keep your home healthy, and that's why you want to go to Simply Safe. Every night, local police departments across America receive hundreds of calls from burglar alarms. The vast majority of the time, they have no idea whether the alarm's real. Is there really a crime going on or not? All the alarm company can tell them is that the motion sensor went off. But Simply Safe gives you a much higher level of home security. If there's a break-in, Simply Safe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account of the crime. That means police dispatch up to 350% faster than for a normal burglar alarm. You get comprehensive protection for your entire home, 24/7 monitoring by live security professionals. And it's only 50 cents a day with no contracts. Visit simplysafe.com/overtime and you'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go now and be sure you go to simplysafe.com/overtime so they know Play Like a Jet sent you. That's simplysafe.com/overtime. So let's continue with the questions. Michael Christopher says, if the Jets had the third pick in the draft this year and not last year, what type of package could they get for the third pick considering Miami wants Tua badly? Would you make a trade in division with them to secure their QB? How far would you move down in this draft in order to secure an extra second rounder? So let's start with the Miami part of this. If I felt like I could get a great deal out of Miami to trade down, then I would certainly consider it. I understand that you'd be giving Tua to them, but at the same time, you've got to worry about yourself. And whatever the Miami Dolphins are going to do, you don't want to be helping them out, but you've got to help yourself above anybody else. And it also depends on what they think of Tua. Maybe Joe Douglas doesn't think Tua is going to be that great, so he doesn't mind letting the Dolphins jump up and take Tua. But I would want a pretty hefty package. I'd want probably a next year's first. I might want a second or a third. Like, you're talking about going up and getting a quarterback, the price always goes up, and especially since you're trading with a division rival, this is where the trading with a division rival thing makes sense, because you can price gouge them. And then as far as how far to move down for an extra second rounder, if those four offensive tackles are off the board and Douglas isn't in love with any of the edge rushers, I think the deal that we talked about earlier, Luke, a 2 and a 4 or whatever it was to move down to 21, that's not a terrible deal. I wouldn't mind moving down to number 21 or something in that range. I'd say anywhere between 15 and 21 to get a second round pick would be fine.
Yeah, I think if you move in between that kind of 18 to 22, you're looking at guys like possibly Josh Jones out of Houston, a couple of the edge rushers who I think are a bit rich for the 11th overall pick. I think that's a nice little pocket in the draft where you can get some value still. I'd be comfortable with that. To answer the first part of the question, look, I think there's two taxes involved, as you mentioned. They're trading in the division, so you want to get more out of Miami, and you're trading up for a quarterback. So I would do it personally. I think the other thing to factor in is that the Giants are picking at number 4. So they're not going to take a quarterback. They're unlikely to trade out because I'm pretty sure they're going to take one of the tackles. So Miami can stand pat at number 5 and still probably get Tua anyway. So why wouldn't you benefit in getting that extra pick this year if it's a first rounder this year, with them obviously having two later on in the first round in 2020, or if it's one next year? I think you have to make that move. As you said, we don't know what Tua is going to be. We don't know what Joe's opinion of him is, but I'd be leaning towards making that trade with Miami.
Next question comes in from Matt Diner. He says, does anyone in Australia know who Lachlan Edwards is? Is he some sort of big celebrity? And how popular would you say American football would rank in Australia in terms of number of sports? Also, who would win in a fight, Harold Bishop or Manish? I have no idea who Harold Bishop is, so you'll have to enlighten me on that one, Luke.
Okay, look, I'll break down that part first. So I'm pretty sure the guy who asked this question is from the UK. Harold Bishop is a character from the TV show Neighbours, which is obviously an Australian TV show, but it's huge over in England. They love it over there. He's a I don't know, maybe a 75 to 80 year old guy, very religious trombone player, that kind of guy. He has about probably 50 to 70 pounds on Manish. He's got the Lord on his side. I'm going to take Harold Bishop in a fight. As far as Lachlan Edwards, I'd say, look, 95% of Australia probably doesn't know who Lach Edwards was. The reason for that is that he wasn't a star in a sport previously to going over and punting in the US. If you're talking about a guy like Val Holmes, who was on the Jets practice squad this year, he was a household name in Australia, so he obviously made headlines. Jared Hayne was another guy a few years ago who had a shot with the 49ers on their roster at running back, but Lach Edwards, not so much. And as far as the popularity of American football, I'd say it's the biggest of the US sports over here in comparison to the popularity of baseball or of the NBA. It's probably fourth or fifth when you work in Australian sports as well, things like cricket that's huge over here and our rugby codes as well. But American football is definitely up there in Australia.
Next question comes in from AJ Tranzano. He says, seeing how much Humphrey signed for, what do you think Conklin will go for? And will the Jets get him for that much? Are there other options if the Jets miss out on Conklin, Scherf, or Thuney? So let's start with the first part of this, which is how much Jack Conklin's going to get. Humphrey signed 3 years, $45 million, 30 of it is guaranteed. I would expect Conklin's going to get at least that much, probably more. So yeah. Could the Jets land him? Possibly, but they're going to have to pay through the nose, and they're going to have plenty of competition. So I don't know if the Jets are going to be near the top of his list, but he's going to have plenty of suitors. If the Jets don't get Conklin, Thuney, or Scherf, are there other options? Yeah, Glasgow is an option. There's one guy that you could possibly look at. Jermaine Ifedi is somebody else. But at that point, you're definitely going down a little bit. I think Glasgow is an interesting option, though. Michael Nania took a look at him. He's played three different positions on the interior offensive line, and he's the kind of guy that could come in there and at least plug up the hole temporarily. I think he's somebody that they should consider even if they sign one of the three guys that AJ just named.
Yeah, I think, look, the Humphreys deal scared the daylights out of me because it's just showing how competitive this market's going to be. I think Conklin's looking at probably 17 or 18 per year over 4 years. I think that's kind of what you're looking at if you want to get his services. I think it might be a little rich for Joe Douglas. Look, we need offensive line help badly, but that's a lot of money to invest in a player who's probably in that 10 to 15 range at right tackle. I'm not sure we'll see what he does. A couple of names that interest me outside of that top bracket of free agent linemen are some older guys, which may not seem like perfect fits for the Jets who are building and obviously trying to get younger. But guys like Costanza and Balaga out of Green Bay and these kind of guys, look, they're 34, 36 years old, but the lifespan of tackles are obviously greater than skill positions in the NFL. Whitworth's still playing pretty good ball for the Rams. I think there's some interesting older guys who can be that plug, you know, plug the hole for a few years if we don't land the tackle at 11. But look, you obviously want to land one of those marquee guys ideally, but we'll see how it all plays out.
Next question comes in from Eddie Reckis. He says, I'm a Bell fan and hope the team keeps him. If they do, what does the running back depth look like next year? Also, who do you guys predict the number one receiver for the Jets will be? So let's start with the first part of that. If the Jets keep Le'Veon Bell, what will the depth look like? I think they're going to draft a running back, whether it's Anthony McFarland Jr. or somebody else. I think they'll get one in the mid rounds. And so I think that it would be Bell, that guy, and then they'll probably get some sort of veteran to round it out. Maybe even Josh Adams, who they seem to like. From what I understand, Joe Douglas is a fan of his. So it could be Bell, a rookie, and Josh Adams. I don't know if we're going to see Bilal Powell back or if we're going to see Ty Montgomery back. I would bet that it's more likely, if anything, that Powell would come back than Ty Montgomery. They didn't seem to like to use Montgomery much, but Powell is a favorite of the organization, so maybe if he comes back on a cheap one-year deal. As far as who the number one receiver is going to be next year, if Robbie Anderson leaves, I know you're not going to like to hear this, Luke. I'm sure they'll go out and they'll get a veteran, but it's definitely conceivable that unless you consider one of the rookies they draft, which I expect to happen, to be the number one receiver, at least for the beginning of the season, you would have to consider Jamison Crowder to be the number one receiver.
Yeah, I think, look, I'll start with the receiver conversation. I think Breshad Perryman's a guy they might look at in free agency. He's not that typical number one. Not that Robbie Anderson is anyway, but I think he'd be an intriguing option to bring in free agency, which is littered with a lot of older guys like Sanders and DT and those guys. And I think, look, realistically, if you're getting a guy like Brandon Ayuk or Mims from Baylor or Pittman or one of those guys, I think they're probably going to be as close as you can get to your number one receiver in 2020. Crowder's going to get a ton of volume because of the way that, you know, the offense is played and based off a lot of short to intermediate routes over the middle. But I think it's going to be, you know, a lot of work by committee, and there won't be that typical number one that a lot of teams have. And I'm not a huge believer in receivers and numbers to their names anyway. Touching on the running back depth, I think we both expect Lev to be there. So answering it in that vein, I think you're going to get a quicker change of pace back in the draft in that fourth or fifth round. You touched on McFarland. We both really like him out of Maryland. And then I think you're going to get that vet between the tackles back, a guy like Bilal. I wouldn't be even surprised if he's back. But I think it's going to be, you know, Lev Bell, a fourth to fifth round draft pick, and that senior kind of can step in if there's an injury to Bell and lead the running attack kind of guy.
Next series of questions comes in from Sun Moon Rise. Says, what do you think is the most dangerous place to live in Australia and why? And what is the most fascinating place over there? Also, I think of Australia as a fascinating landscape, but how do people deal with the issue that they have to share these landscapes with lots of dangerous animals? So those are obviously questions for you, Luke.
Okay, let me start by saying that I think the wildlife and the insects and the dangerous venomous animals is extremely overblown by people from international countries like the US and the UK. We have a lot of wildlife. We have some dangerous spiders and insects and snakes and things like that, but we're not all riding around on kangaroos and battling snakes in our backyard and that kind of thing. I think it's a little dramatized, but that's something I had to get off my chest, first of all. The most dangerous places are up north in Queensland, and in Western Australia, in places like that, mostly because they have a lot of crocodiles up there. You'll find more snakes and those kind of things because there's a lot more outback space. So they're probably the most dangerous. If you're living in suburban areas like Sydney or Brisbane or somewhere like that, you're not living any differently to the major cities in the US. But in the country areas and the outback, you're facing a few different challenges, that's for sure.
Also, Sunrun Rise asks, do you think the heavily injured Matt Skura is worth taking a risk on to compete with Jonathan Harrison at center? Depends on the price. If the price is right, sure, why not?
Well, the Jets can't get any worse at center. I think the last 2 years, they're in the bottom three in productivity out of the position with guys like Spencer Long and Wes Johnson and that kind of thing. So they're going to look at a ton of options. I will say the middle of the draft is loaded. I don't want these guys in the second round, but guys like Cushenberry and Hennessy and Harris and all those names, Ruiz from Michigan, they're going to be on Joe Douglas's radar. And I think the Jets are more likely to answer that question in the draft rather than through free agency. But we'll see how it plays out.
Next question comes in from Peter J. Dillard. He says, guys, as a Jets fan, I have no hope that the offense will be anywhere near what I want it to be. But would it be a failure if Douglas got Vitae at tackle from Philly and Glasgow for the interior, both of them in free agency? I think I might be okay with that thought. I honestly wouldn't hate that. Obviously, we all want to see them go out and get somebody like Tooney or Scherf or Conklin. But more realistically, those guys are going to have a lot of options, and you would imagine that the Jets aren't going to be super high on their list. Vitae's interesting because he's a guy that's played fairly well in spot duty, but you don't know if he can hold up as a full-time starter. I always have the flashbacks to Wayne Hunter, who looked really good spelling Damian Woody, and then as soon as he was signed to be the full-time starter, he looked like a disaster. But Joe Douglas would know better than most how good or bad Vitae is because he was around him in Philly. And then as far as Glasgow, like I said, Michael Nannier really likes Glasgow, and I think he's interesting because he's solid and he can play three different positions on the line. So if they got those two guys, it's not the home run that we would have wanted, but at least it would be two legitimate bodies to put on that offensive line. In the case of Vitae, somebody who can at the very least challenge for a starting job as a tackle. And as far as Glasgow, a guy that we know can play three different positions. So it's not as flashy as we'd like, but I don't think it would be the worst offseason.
No, not at all. I think Glasgow, is a definite upgrade if you're playing at center or at right guard. I think Brian Winters was really bad the last couple of years. So you're looking at a significant upgrade there, and I have no problem whatsoever with that. Vaitai, I'm okay with exploring it as long as it comes with a tackle at 11. I think if you have maybe Thomas, Adoga, and Vaitai as your three tackles going into 2020, I think it's a good group. There's three more than serviceable starters there, and it's a huge upgrade on what we had in the room in 2019.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you bring in Vaitai to theoretically compete with Adoga for one spot and then you draft a tackle for the other spot, then you've at least got something going, because we don't know if Adoga is somebody that can start. We don't know if Vaitai can be a full-time starter. If the two of them battle it out, maybe one of the two of them emerges. And then, like you said, if they get somebody like Andrew Thomas or Mekhi Becton or Tristan Wirfs or Jedrick Wills, then the Jets all of a sudden are moving in the right direction. It's not the home run that we'd want, but it's still an improvement over what they've got right now for sure.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from Gus Toon. He says, give me one reason to be excited next season. Sam Darnold hopefully making the leap in year three. That's all I got for you right now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to reach for a stat that Michael Narnia put out the other day. I think it might have been yesterday. He talked about how from weeks 10 to 17, Sam was first in QB pressure rate, which obviously is a negative thing. And despite that, he was 10th in pass rating and I think 11th in yards per attempt. So you have to be excited about your franchise 22-year-old quarterback. We talked about it on the last time I was on the pod, Scott, but he may not have made the leaps and bounds we were hoping for, but the improvement was there, and it was there in key areas, particularly down the stretch. And one other thing to be excited about, look, Greg Williams put up a top 10 DVOA defense in 2019, and that was with next to zero talent at edge or corner, which are the two most important positions on the field. If the Jets can get one of those edge guys in free agency, there's no reason they don't have a top 7 to 10 D again. And I think that's exciting. Building around a good young core with Williams and Adams and potentially that new edge, I think that's another reason to be excited as well.
Next question comes in from Steve Ballou. He says, is there a weirder, more outdated sporting event anywhere in the world than the NFL scouting combine? Surely it's not used to judge players' ability to play football when there are endless tapes of almost every player. What is the point? So I see what you're saying, but I do think that there is some use to it. And yeah, the tape is going to speak loudly, but look at a guy like Jakai Polite as an example. Now, I was big on Jakai Polite because I thought his tape really stood out. I thought he was somebody with a lot of pass rush potential. He'd done really well at Florida. You could see the elite burst there. But the thing that the combine does is it gives you the opportunity to see these guys up close. It gives you the opportunity to really talk to them, to interview them. And I suppose you could do this at individual pro days, but this is a way for all these guys to be there in one central hub and for teams to schedule multiple interviews and sessions with guys, work them out privately, so on and so forth. So I do think that it serves a purpose. You heard Jamal Westerman come on the show and describe his experience for you, so you got a better idea of what actually happens at these things. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to that yet, go into the archives and check it out. Well worth your time. So I hear you. There are parts of the combine that are a little outdated, and certainly I can't imagine that anybody is using the drills from the combine to say whether or not a player is worth drafting in a certain spot or not. But I think it's the other aspects that I just talked about that keep the combine going year to year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, do I really care how many times a wide receiver can, you know, can bench press 240 pounds or whatever it is? No, I don't. You know, do I care how a offensive lineman runs a 40-yard dash? No, but I think there's still some valuable tools in the actual on-field part of the combine as well. I think the speed and testing and the three cones are important for your receivers and your cornerbacks. I think now if you're a corner running 4.5s, late 4.6s, you're struggling to play in the league. We saw a guy like Tease Tabor out of Florida a couple of years ago. You pick up on those guys who just aren't cut athletically to play those positions at the next level. But the main reason they're there is for the interviews and to meet these guys in person. So there's still some validity to it, but you know, I don't think it's super important. It's not the biggest part of the process by any means. Tape will always be king, but I don't think it's going anywhere. Plus, it's moving to primetime. It's another moneymaker for the NFL, and it's not going to leave our screens anytime soon.
I would think of it as a job fair. You're not going to get hired just off the job fair, but it's an opportunity for people to meet each other and for in-person interactions to happen. Ultimately, you're going to get hired or not hired based on your resume, but I think that if you have these in-person interactions, it could help or hurt you depending on how they go, as we've seen clearly. I mentioned Ja'Kai Polite as an example. That's going to wrap up the mailbag. If you haven't had a chance to give us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. It's an easy way to help out the show. If you like what we're doing, it doesn't cost you any money. It doesn't take you much time. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. Same thing, by the way, with Joe Caparoso's Turn on the Jets podcast. And by the way, Joe Caparoso and Connor Rogers from Bleacher Report are launching a joint project together. It's a 10-part series with a lot of outstanding guests chronicling what's gone wrong with the Jets over the last 10 years. It's available for purchase. It's going to be $9.99. Joe talked about it on his podcast this week. Joe and Connor are going to come on Play Like a Jet next week and talk about it as well. And I think it's well worth your time. Some tremendous guests, too. And you're going to hear some stories and some little tidbits that you haven't heard before from the era. Also, they're, of course, going to talk about what they think the Jets can do to get out of that hole. So highly recommend checking that series out. I helped work on it, so I've had the opportunity to listen to the episodes. And let me tell you, they are all excellent. So if you're a Jets fan, you absolutely want to get in on that. Like I said, it's going to be $9.99. Follow Joe on Twitter at Jay Caparoso and Connor at Connor J. Rogers, and you'll get more details on exactly how to order that series. Thanks again for listening. Thanks again to Luke for coming on. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.